Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it is a Friday. We are live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor, as always, alongside, kind of 10 feet away. Our set was built for a virus. We can withstand it because of the way it's set up. It is great to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. You know, I'm going to throw something out to you right now, and I'm going to tell a little story here. And this is, part of it is factual, and part of it is a theory.
Okay.
So stay with me on this. We just watched the MJ documentary. One of the reasons they decided to give this the green light is because Michael Jordan said, as he was watching LeBron James in Akron celebrating a championship, people finally started saying, is LeBron better than Michael? It was now entertained. It was considered a real topic. You could watch the debate shows, this network and others. And Michael said, time out, time out. I make $150 million a year with my brand. I have to fight for my brand. I have to fight for my legacy. Because, folks, how many singers out there haven't had a hit in 15 years? 20, 25. And they can still travel and make lots of money because they had hits in the 70s and 80s. Once you're a star in America and a legacy is created, it is a paycheck for the rest of your life. REO Speedwagon may not sell out 80,000, but they get gigs and they travel. And so does Black Sabbath or this band or that band. Once you're a star, that brand, your name is a paycheck. And so it is with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron's face, name, Super Bowl will pay him the rest of his life. His legacy is important. And I would not blame Aaron Rodgers, like Michael Jordan, if he's considering it strongly. And Aaron's smart enough, he knows that he can only control that legacy mostly while he plays. So yesterday it was very interesting. Matt LaFleur, his head coach, came out. Now, Green Bay's offense has stars. Aaron's a star. He's a top five quarterback. Devontae Adams is a beast. He is unbelievable talent. Aaron Jones, to me, is a terrific running back. But yet, they're not a big play offense. Matt LaFleur addressed that yesterday.
One area that we really need to improve upon is creating more explosive plays. We were pretty efficient as an offense. I think we were fourth in efficiency, but we were like 23rd in explosive plays. And so I think it does start with the play calling, just maybe taking a few more chances to try to help generate those plays down the field.
The key word there is efficiency, and I want you to remember efficiency. So with Aaron and Devontae and Aaron Jones and two offensive coaches, Mike McCarthy and Matt LaFleur, in both cases, they're efficient, but they can't make big plays. Efficiency. So this is something, ironically or coincidentally, Joy was here, I mentioned 2 days ago, that I see Aaron doing something over the last couple of years. This is what I see him doing, and then I'll explain it afterwards. This is me 2 days ago. Aaron's no longer, he's protecting his legacy. He's not elevating it. Is that Aaron the last 2 years has led the NFL in throwaways. Brett Favre was a gunslinger to the end. Aaron is not. He doesn't want to throw picks. And if you look at the NFC and you look at football right now, the risk takers are winning. Why did they draft Jordan Love? It wasn't his efficiency. They drafted him. Every GM I talk to, he's a big risk taker, sometimes too much. Got caught with a little weed. the way he plays is high risk. It's Patrick Mahomes, risk taker. So here's my theory on why this is happening. And I think it's not great for the Packers, because I think the really good GMs in the NFC and the really good coaches and the really good quarterbacks in the NFL, Lamar and Mahomes and Wentz, are risk takers. The very best GMs in the league, Howie Roseman, Philadelphia, they're risk takers. It's at Kyle Shanahan, McVay, they're risk takers. We're in a very risk-taking NFL. Didn't used to be like that. The young GM, the coaches are younger, the GMs are younger, the quarterbacks are starring younger, and they're all risk takers. I think Aaron knows something. I think Aaron Rodgers knows that Green Bay isn't and never has been a free agent market. He's at a deficit there. He can't win. He also knows he doesn't have an owner. It's not his fault, but that's a disadvantage. And Aaron looks at it and thinks to himself, okay, I'm never going to have the hardware of Brady. All my contemporaries, all my guys I'm grouped with. When you say Elway, you think Marino, right? When you say Elway, you don't think of Otto Graham. When you say Elway, you think Marino. You say Montana, you think Aikman. You say Bradshaw, you think Stabler. When you say Brady, you think Manning. And then you start thinking Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, and they all play together in Drew Brees, his contemporaries. Aaron knows. Remember the word efficiency. Aaron knows, I'll never get the hardware of Brady in my group of quarterbacks. I'll never get the stats of Brees. I'll never have the likability, y'all, of Peyton or Favre. But what do I currently own in the NFL? Efficiency. Aaron, best all-time passer rating. He throws virtually no interceptions. His career, he's got 364 touchdowns, 84 picks. He could retire in 4 years, perhaps under 100 interceptions. He is now, consciously or subconsciously, playing to protect that because he knows how valuable his legacy is. He would deny this. He would say that's not true. But the numbers don't lie. He leads the NFL in throwaways the last 2 years. He doesn't want to throw a pick. His coach acknowledging, I wish we were a little more risk-taking. Aaron Jones, Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers, generally above-average offensive line. They're bottom half of the NFL in explosive plays. Well, it's McCarthy. He's gone. Well, it's LaFleur. Really? Greg Cosell's talked about this time and time again. He's doing his own thing. Is Aaron, again, thinking about it or not? And I think he's smart enough to think about it. We watched Michael Jordan, to most indisputably the greatest basketball player of all time, greenlight a documentary to cement and protect his legacy because it's $150 million a year of shoe sales. He's like 8% of Nike's sales are Jordan. And I think Aaron realizes, I don't have an owner. Free agents don't want to play here. We tend to be a conservative franchise. We're not going to pay a fortune for a GM. I got my Super Bowl. I got my commercials. I've got my passer rating. It's the one thing I have over Brady. I got it over Manning. I got it over Favre. I got it over Aikman. I got it over Marino. I got it over Elway. And damn it, that matters. It's millions and tens of millions of dollars going forward. And he is now playing to protect it. Doesn't mean he's not great. It doesn't mean he's not talented. But he is throwing the ball away, won't throw it downfield, won't take risks because it moves him to second or third or fourth in passer rating. Then what does he have? It's a much better legacy for Aaron to retire in 4 to 5 years, and this is his legacy. God, he was one of the all-time greats. But, you know, Green Bay didn't really support him much with defenses. I mean, he never had a world-class head coach. Aaron's the winner. He wins that. That's a good legacy. You know, the guy just never got top free agents. You can't blame Aaron for that. I mean, LaFleur, McCarthy, whatever. You know, they never had an owner. Poor guy never had an owner. He's protecting his legacy. This is exactly why LaFleur talked about it. It's why they drafted Jordan Love. It's why he's led the NFL in throwaways the last 2 years. Legacy and branding in this country matters. You got people in country music that haven't had a hit in 30 years. They sell out venues. Because once you're a star in America, the way our business operates, Larry King just signed a $5 million deal to do a podcast. He's 86. You got to protect those legacies. You got to protect them. Do what you want. I think Aaron now plays to protect it more than aggressively build on it. That's my theory. And I keep getting proof and comments that it's true. So that's how I lead my show on a Friday. By the way, I don't think that yesterday I said I thought it was Mr. Optimism with Baker Mayfield. I don't think that was negative with Aaron Rodgers. It's just my theory on what's happening. Do you buy it or not?
Yeah, I can buy it. But, an observation doesn't necessarily have to be inherently negative or positive.
It can just be. Yeah, if I'm saying it's cloudy, I'm not blaming the clouds. It's just just an observation.
Right, I'm blaming the weather, man.
Nobody's fault.
No, but, also, legacy is important. Legacy and brand.
Oh, my God.
All that is very important.
It's for the rest of your life. If you're very lucky, you just say LeBron. It's a paycheck. Larry King.
Right. How you
Joe
are remembered.
Rogan.
And when you can control it, that's crucial.
Yeah. David Letterman. You say the name, you can sell it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
They're talking now about having a play-in tournament. They're talking about all this reseeding and play-in tournament stuff. And I think it's a lot of different ideas, but there are suggestions now that the reason they're doing the play-in tournament is just to get Zion into the playoffs. That if they're not doing this to get the Wizards in or the Blazers in. Okay, they're doing this to get Zion in. That if the Pelicans were an 8 seed, we'd just go right into the playoffs. In fact, Shams Charania had something moments ago, excellent NBA reporter, said, over half the GMs want to go straight into the playoffs. They're doing this for Zion. Zion's a TV star. He got proven ratings in college. He added 40% ratings to Duke basketball's normal ratings. 40%. Summer League, one game, shattered a record. Draft night, the minute Zion's drafted, the numbers go down after he's drafted. Draft lottery night, it went up because of Zion. And now the NBA is saying, we want to jerry-rig this thing. We just want to get Zion in. I'm not surprised. Sometimes people are just stars early. Magic Johnson to the Lakers, the smile, a 6'9 guard. He couldn't shoot when he broke in. He couldn't really defend. Not everybody bought into Magic. Magic was a star the first day he was in the NBA. He looked like it. He talked like it. He sounded like it. He smiled like it. He played like it. Showtime Magic, perfect name LA. Zion's a star. But the question is, why is Zion a star? Is it because he is a brilliant three-point shooter? No. The best player in transition? No. The most polished player? No. It's a combination of power and Duke. He goes to Duke. The numbers explode. It's the number one program. It's the most known, most marketed, and the most well-known coach. I can even spell his last name, and he's got like two Z's in it. Coach K has got his own nickname. And then Zion goes there. Then his shoe explodes. And then there's controversy if he should play. And then we see his smile and we see his game. For all the NBA people, Giannis doesn't move the needle. If he did, why did the Eastern Conference ratings collapse when LeBron left? Kawhi doesn't move the needle. Why did the Eastern Conference ratings collapse when LeBron went west? Lillard, James Harden, they don't move the needle. They're just great players. This league has now three current guys that move the needle. LeBron, Steph, Zion. The reason I couldn't wait to watch Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield on bad teams, because I watched them with Oklahoma. Joe Burrow, LSU. Sam Darnold, USC. Tua, Alabama. I didn't really care about watching Jimmy Garoppolo. I didn't see him play on television. Even though he played for my beloved Patriots, I didn't really care. Lamar, Louisville, I saw him 10 times, 15 in college. Trevor Lawrence, we're talking about him now. He plays at Clemson. Go ahead, NBA, and roll your eyes at the power of college athletics. But there's no reason he's this big of a star. He wasn't the number one recruit. It is his power, his magnetism, and the platform of Duke. Trae Young's a great player. but he didn't play at Duke. He didn't have a controversial college career. Controversy, magnetism, smile, power, and Duke. There's a reason all these quarterbacks you can't wait to watch in the NFL. I mean, you're really into. They played at LSU. They played at Alabama. They play at Oklahoma. They play at Clemson. They play at USC. They play big college brands. NBA's just jerry-rigging this thing. They just want to get Zion in. It's not just because he dunks it. The whole league, mostly outside of Steph, can dunk it. It's the power of the platform.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Kevin Stefanski is the new coach of the Cleveland Browns. And I think he's going to work. I think he's better than the last coach. And I think Baker's going to get to the playoffs. And I watched Baker when he was bad. I think he's going to be better. But speaking of premises, so a coach came out, a scout came out and said, listen, Stefanski won with Kirk Cousins. He is, I'll just read a quote, he is way more talented Baker Mayfield than Kirk Cousins. Well, I think he's got a better arm. But that's a premise I don't necessarily buy into, is that last year, every time I would bring a smart football person on the show, all of them said the same thing. People who had been quarterbacks in the NFL, Baker got into trouble when he thought he was more athletic than he was. So I don't buy that. In fact, I never bought it with Tebow. I never bought it with Johnny Manziel. I did. There are quarterbacks. Carson Wentz, I've said, that's an athlete. Sam Darnold, that's an athlete. Lamar, obviously an athlete. Patrick Mahomes is an athlete. I don't buy that Baker's a great athlete. So I thought to myself today, if I just rated quarterbacks, not on stats, I don't care about win-loss. That's not what I'm doing here. I don't care about your playoff wins, your completion percentage. If you told me, who are the most athletic quarterbacks in the NFL? And what do I mean by athletic? Mobility, arm, the ability to throw at multiple arm angles. There's an it quality. You can make losing plays into winning plays. The offensive line breaks down. You make stuff happen. Where just athleticism, I mean, you can, as I'm talking about this, you can just see Deshaun Watson. People that can overcome a bad play, a bad line. And I put down, because this coach said that Baker is way more talented than Kirk Cousins. I do think he has a better arm. But I don't buy the talent thing on Baker because I thought last year when he thought he was talented, he got into huge trouble. So here were my 10 quarterbacks that I believe are just the most talented. And you tell me, Joy, if you think I'm right or wrong. Mahomes 1, Wentz 2, Wilson 3, Rodgers 4, Lamar 5. Now, Lamar is more talented runner, but I think the combination Aaron running and throwing. Deshaun 6, Cam 7, doesn't have a current team. We just put our staff put a logo up there. I think Josh Allen at Buffalo, Kyler Murray, and Sam Darnold. It's not win-loss. Sam Darnold last year went 7-6 post-mono with an egregious offensive line and a bottom five receiving core. So Baker's nowhere near that to me. I wouldn't put him 11. I think I'd probably put Matt Stafford has a world-class arm. So I don't love Kirk Cousins, but he is competent. He keeps getting better completion percentage, passer rating. It gets better. He's coachable. He completes like 68% of his throws. I think last year he was close to 70. So this is, again, I never bought into the initial belief. I didn't buy Baker was a number one quarterback, number one pick. I just didn't buy it. I thought he was a quarterback. I think he's a franchise quarterback. I don't buy that he's super talented. People kept trying to sell me this on Tebow for years. Baker ran a 4.8 40. Tebow ran a 4.75. Andrew Luck was in the 4.6s. Cam Newton, I think, was in the 4.5 or 4.6s. And the arm and the movement and the size. Kyler Murray, when you look at him, that's really special. Josh Allen at Buffalo, humongous arm, can throw from different angles. They build running plays like Lamar just for Josh Allen to run the ball. He's like Big Ben when Big Ben was skinnier and less banged up. So I do think Stefanski's going to win. I think Baker's going to win. I think the Browns are going to win. This is not an anti-Brown thing, but you can't sell me on something. You're kind of arguing with yourself, and I don't buy into the, oh my God, he's just way more talented. That's not what Baker is. What Baker is, he's got guts. He'll let it rip. He's pretty aggressive. He can be accurate when he's under control. He's got a pretty darn good arm. But if you think the play breaks down, that's not what he is. He gets engulfed. He cannot run defensive ends. That's where he's not. He may think he is, and Freddie Kitchens may have thought he was. I would argue the opposite. He's not nearly as athletic as people think. He runs a 4.8 40. That's slow for a high school quarterback. That's not what he is. What he is has to be redefined, and I think Stefanski will do it. Keep him in the pocket, run the football, play action, and occasionally let him crank it up and throw it deep because he's got a pretty good arm. He throws a pretty good deep ball, and he's got receivers to get it to.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I think relationships are healthy when you can argue. If you can respectfully argue. I mean, I'm not talking about your day-to-day stuff like get this at the store and that at the store, but when you're arguing, you're talking about something that matters in life. You're just not blabbing. You'd like argue over kids or finances or your retirement or job opportunities. It's real things. And I think you can't grow if you have to walk on eggshells because your wife's always offended or you as a guy are too alpha. You just want to hear, you know, what makes you happy. And there's a lot of guys like that. I like people. I think relationships are strongest. Like if I was a president and hired a vice president, the first thing I'd worry about is if I yell at him, is he okay? Because I'm okay if you yell at me. But we got to have a relationship where I can go, that doesn't work. Let's go. It doesn't work. And I know I can be curt and sometimes I can wear people out. But that's the key to this thing. And I think in Green Bay, LaFleur walks on eggshells with Aaron Rodgers. And I think Mike McCarthy did too, because Aaron can get prickly and passive aggressive and go on radio and take some shots. And he is a superstar and he is great. And he's a first ballot Hall of Famer and he's got power and leverage and control of the franchise. So yesterday, Matt LaFleur is talking about the relationship with Rodgers when they took Jordan Love in the first round.
We talk four times a week whenever we get those opportunities to meet. You know, in those individual meetings. And I feel really good about where we're at. You know, we both understand that this is a business. And, you know, when that whole thing went down, it was just one of those situations where there were a couple guys targeted that had just previously been picked, and Jordan was the next guy on the board.
Well, he wasn't actually. You traded up to get him, which was an aggressive move, not a passive-aggressive move. He wasn't the next guy on the board. You moved up to get him. And that tells us something, although what exactly, it's not worth arguing over. But I think that was Matt LaFleur trying to protect Aaron Rodgers. This is why we drafted him, instead of just being honest. He's really talented. He's going to play here eventually. Aaron's getting older. Just be honest about it. Belichick never apologized to Tom Brady for drafting Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, nobody apologized to Drew Brees for getting Teddy Bridgewater and Jameis Winston. You don't feel a need. Josh McDaniels barks at Tom Brady. We have visual proof. Bill Belichick barks at Brady. We've been told that. Why? Because they can. Because Tom can take it. The way this whole game works is the head coach of a football team comes in. He creates a culture. And then he needs his quarterback to buy into it and spread it to the masses. This is what Michael Jordan did with Phil. Remember when they won their first title together and they hugged? And Phil said, you did it the right way, Michael. You bought in. That's what he kept saying. Remember, Doc, you did it. It wasn't you won a championship. You did it the right way. You bought into my system and you spread the gospel. Tim Duncan Popovich. Duncan took less money. Duncan got barked at practice. Popovich. Duncan did it the right way. Brady does it the right way. You buy into the culture and then spread the gospel. It's hard to do that with Aaron because he never buys in. I mean, Jeff Saturday said a couple years ago, he'd go in the huddle with Mike McCarthy and roll his eyes. It's quoted. I didn't make it up. It's out there. Aaron, does he think he's too smart? Is he snarky? I don't know. I don't know him. But I never feel there's a buy-in. And so that's why he's led the NFL in throwaways the last 2 years. He just doesn't like the calls. He doesn't buy into it. Greg Cosell has said this for multiple years. All Greg Cosell does is watch film. He doesn't take sides. He doesn't care. But he said this for years about Aaron Rodgers and sometimes the difficulty coaching him.
say what you want about Aaron Rodgers. He's super talented. We know that. He'll be a Hall of Famer. But Aaron Rodgers, over the last number of years, has evolved, or one could say devolved, into a player that plays a lot outside of structure and outside of rhythm. And when you get a chance to watch the coaching tape, as I do, and this is not an interpretation, this is what the tape tells you, he leaves a lot of throws on the field within the timing of the offense that are there to be thrown. And I guarantee that that bothers Matt LaFleur. And given the age of Rodgers, and who knows how long Rodgers can play, the age of Rodgers and Matt LaFleur clearly coming off last season, having probably pretty much carte blanche at this point, I think he's looking to say, hey, I'm going to start to put this offense together the way I want it to look. And while Rodgers is great, I'm a little frustrated with the way our offense plays out.
And that was Greg on the Rich Eisen show recently. This is a real thing. We have quotes from players. Aaron would roll eyes. We have stats. He led the NFL back-to-back coaches throwaways. We have Greg Cosell tape analyzation. I'm just not a sports guy making crap up. Like, we have acknowledgement in the huddle, actual data points, actual film study. And so I think when you're a sensitive player, and Aaron can be a little more sensitive, Kevin Durant is, you have to walk on eggshells. And I don't think that's why the Kevin Durant Warriors thing blew up. Like Kerr can go and bark at Draymond. I mean, Kerr and Draymond, I've been told, have gotten into shouting matches. I had somebody who covers an NBA team that heard Draymond and Kerr, like, outside of the locker room. But that's a healthy relationship. Kerr and Draymond is a healthy relationship. Kerr can get after Steph Curry. Phil could get after Michael. Josh McDaniels gets after Brady. That's an incredibly healthy relationship. You're pissed, yell at me, we get through it. I've always liked bosses like that. You're mad, I think you've seen me. You're mad, address it, let's go. Let's wrap it up, let's get it done. I don't want this thing hovering over us. I feel LaFleur in McCarthy, there's a walking on eggshells, and Jordan Love, he was the next on our board. No, actually, you traded up to get him. You got to be able to take the yells and the screams and the barkings, Aaron, or you're not going to get better and you're not going to be in a real relationship. You got to be able to get yelled at.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Michael Vick's a friend of mine, 13 years in the NFL, full Pro Bowls. He's been going back and forth between Florida and Virginia. I'm going to ask him about, because I know Mike loves golf, I'm going to ask him about the match between Brady and Manning in a second, but let's bring him in via the Coward Global Satellite Network, Mike Vick. So, you know, it's interesting. I saw a story on Baker Mayfield, and he said the other day, he's like, I'm not going to do talking, I'm just going to play. And I think it's the right thing to do. And I do think he's going to be successful this year because I think he has the right coach. But I want you to go back to your first year in the NFL. And it doesn't go as well. And Baker's first couple of years, they haven't gone well. What motivated you in that off season, first to second? Was it money? Was it fame? Was it winning? Like, what made you put two extra hours in a day and work?
Colin, that first off season, the only thing I was thinking about was not being labeled that B word, and that's a bust. I spent all off season preparing myself in the passing game, working on my speed, my acceleration, learning the offense, spending time with my receivers and my running backs, and trying to make sure that I was, you know, in the best shape of my life and mentally ready for that 2002 season. The only thing I never wanted to be labeled was a bust. And aside from money, aside from the fame, because that all comes with good play and winning, I did not want to play, you know, 3 to 4 years in the NFL and then be looking for a job or a backup somewhere and bouncing around. I wanted to be that guy. I wanted to be someone, you know, who was respected around the National Football League, and things took off for me. And I think it was a credit to the hard work. But being labeled a bust is something that you want, and it's always going to linger if you're a first round pick. So you have to make sure that you do everything in your power in year 2 and 3 to ensure that's not being tagged upon you or a label that's going to stick to you. I mean, it's just there. It doesn't go anywhere. It's something that, you know, it exists around the National Football League, and you should be leery of it if you're a quarterback or if you in any position.
You know, Michael, it's interesting. I haven't gotten your take when the Packers drafted Jordan Love. I said I thought it was okay as long as they would have drafted a wide receiver next. When they got your replacement and they didn't draft a wide receiver, then I get Aaron being like, whoa, come on, you got to get me somebody else. And Aaron is older and he's had surgeries. But can you defend Green Bay's position, or do you see where Aaron, you know, you wake up in the morning and it's like, what's the point? We can't beat San Francisco. We can't compete with them. We need players. Where do you land on this?
That pick right there was very surprising to me. I think Aaron Rodgers still has a lot of football left in him. I still think he's one of the top quarterbacks in the National Football League, and no one can argue that. And when I think about Aaron's career, you know, the last 6 or 7 years, he just had no help. You know, they don't bring in big-time free agents. You know, they haven't had a running back behind him in years until, you know, the guy last year stepped up. And, you know, it's just been tough for Aaron, and it's going to get tougher. I think he's a guy who can handle having a legit first-round backup quarterback behind him. I don't think that'll affect him with all the years and all the snaps that he's taken, you know, throughout the course of his career. But, man, I mean, I honestly can see Aaron playing somewhere else in the near future. Will you draft a guy number one, you know, like they did Aaron when Brent was there? You know, they did it for a reason. And, you know, it's just something that's undeniable.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a general manager, you do not want a first-round pick not playing for 4 years. You have to validate your pick. So Green Bay at some point is going to want to validate the pick. So by year two, you can imagine them trying to get him some snaps. I want to move to the situation in New England. I saw Jarrett Stidham play in college. I thought he was good. I didn't think he was special. You're hearing stories now that Brian Hoyer will start over Jarrett Stidham. You watch a lot of SEC football. You've seen Stidham. What do you make of him? What is he?
Well, I watched Stidham very closely in the preseason last year, and I thought he did a good job of just orchestrating the offense and not turning the ball over. He led a couple touchdown drives, made some mistakes. Typical rookie stuff. And then, you know, I noticed that he had a strong arm and he knew exactly where to go with the football. And then a year behind Tom Brady only makes you better. Brian Hoyer, I think he'll be a guy to bridge that gap, you know, if they're waiting on Stidham. But I don't think the New England Patriots let Tom Brady walk to let Brian Hoyer start. I think it's all about Stidham. And his story kind of reminds me of a Tom Brady type of story. Guy not drafted high, wasn't, you know, a guy who was well-known or talked about or, you know, made spectacular plays in college, you know, just did enough. And I thought Tom was amazing in college. That's why what he's done over the, you know, last 15 years of his career doesn't surprise me. But we'll see what Stidham has, man. And I think this move was made for various reasons. He's a young guy. He has a bright future ahead of him, especially being with Bill Belichick. So, you know, this could be some upside for him. I just don't think Brian Hoyer will be the guy starting at the start of the season.
You live just north of Miami, so you see some Dolphins action. Tua is my favorite college quarterback in this draft. I think there are some instinctive things that you can't describe, and I think that's an it quality. It's not that Burrow and, you know, everybody else can't play Justin Herbert. I think Tua is the best talent of this group. The question becomes, do you play him early? I have this belief that after about four practices, everybody in Miami is going to go, okay, wait, timeout. This guy, this he's got secret sauce, and we're just going to get him on the field. That's my guess. When you went to Atlanta, it didn't take many practices before they were like, okay, this guy is special. But you sat for a while. How long do you think Tua sits? Would you play him early?
The longest he's going to sit, Colin, maybe a couple practices when they resume training camp. He might be number two on the depth chart for the first week of training camp. And then from there, he should be number one and take all the reps. After Kyler Murray and, you know, Baker Mayfield and these guys started, you know, when they was young, you know, when they was rookies, it's no excuse. And when you watch this guy throw the football, you know, the accuracy, his ball placement, it's undeniable, man. You got to play Tua early. And, you know, it does you no good playing Ryan Fitzpatrick early in the season in the first couple games. You know, what you may get out of Ryan and taking nothing away from him. He's a great backup. He's a great mentor. And he's done his due in the National Football League. But he can help Tua more with Tua being out on the field and getting the playing experience and then coming to the sideline and being able to, you know, digest everything that just happened if things don't go well or if it does go well. So it won't be long. I expect Tua to be the start of week one. I'm excited to watch this guy. And, man, just watching him throw the football right there, he reminds me of Steve Young.
Yeah, he really does. He's a special talent. By the way, you're a golfer, and I'm watching Tom Brady and Peyton Manning hit it around. And I was totally entertained by it. I thought it was fantastic.
Now, same here.
Have you played with a lot of these guys? What did you make of the match?
Well, you know, I thought it was, you know, I thought it was very competitive. Look, I've heard about Peyton's game, and I know he can hit it a mile. You know, I played some courses, actually one this week that he made an eagle on and you know, drove the green. And so I could understand that, you know, Tiger's Tiger. But I never heard about Brady and his golf game and what he could do. And watching Tom, you know, Tom could put in a little more work, you know. Tom could put in a little more work. And, you know, it was raining. And I know he's the ultimate competitor. Tom would love to do it over again. But, you know, the cause and what it was about and being able to raise that much money, I think, you know, it was just it was something that was definitely needed, man. And it'll go a long way in life. And I'm sure those guys had a great time. It looked like they had fun.
Yeah. It's great seeing you, Michael. I love talking to you. So your family's all good? Your wife making
family's
sure?
Family's all good.
Is your wife on family's you to be good. Safe?
Yeah, my wife won't let me out the house, won't let me go out and get a haircut. I'm growing a little mini afro up under here, but, you know, it's all temporary. I'm enjoying it, though. You know, the love connection is in the building.
There you go. That's the way to look at it right
there. Love connection is here.
All right.
Absolutely.
You know, I love talking to you, Michael. Thank you.
No doubt. Same here. Anytime.